Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, the battle for Sheffield's Leadmill Music Venue. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when there was a huge amount of CMU-related stuff to talk about.
So many things to plug. Not all of which, I must admit, came up last week because we skipped a week. People possibly noticed that. We missed a week.
I hope they did.
So this is almost certainly news to everybody. But some of the things that we have to plug were first plugged in the CMU Daily in the off week. Some of it last week. Anyway, I've got some things to plug. I've got three things to plug. Are you ready?
Okay.
This is really important stuff. I can't believe that anybody would be skipping through this bit of the podcast because it's that important that people listen. We've got so many events coming up. And here's the big thing. This is three in-person events that I'm plugging here. Events happening in a room with real people in three different locations, albeit all within the United Kingdom. So here we go. Number one, the UD Industry Takeover Seminars are back. So these are events that we used to run in partnership with UD a few years ago now, actually, because obviously there was the 2 year of nothing happening because of the pandemic in terms of real world events. But I don't think we did them in 2019 either. So it's been a while since we have teamed up on this. I know UD did events that year, but we weren't involved in those, I don't think. Anyway, the Industry Takeover Seminar is the regular event that UD Music organise in partnership with us on our CMU DIY side. These are regular events. They're happening at a brand new space called Talent House in Stratford, East London, which is super convenient for me, which is the most important thing, but convenient for everyone else as well, I hope. And basically, each of these sessions consist of me presenting a speedy CMU DIY guide to a different aspect of the music industry. We are then joined by a panel of experts from across the industry whose expertise is related to the stuff I've said about. So we always have that interesting moment where we see whether or not they agree with my CMU DIY guide or whether they disagree. They usually agree. That's the good news. So I do a little presentation. We then ask them lots of questions, and then the audience get to also ask questions. And the thing about these UD events is the questions of the audience are always brilliant and plentiful. So a brand new series of the Industry Takeover Seminar is kicking off this week as the podcast goes out. So the first one, called The Music Industry, A Blueprint, is happening on Thursday, the 21st of April. And then there's future editions every 2 to 3 weeks through to July. So we'll put the links in the podcast notes. But if you are early on in your music industry career, on stage or off stage, or if you know somebody who is, possibly more likely with a Setlist audience, then do check out the Industry Takeover Seminars that are coming up.
Okay, number two.
Number two. Now, this is a curveball.
Oh.
Although, we did have that edition of Setlist a few weeks ago where we talked about comedy copyright. Do you remember that? We sort of expanded the remit of this music business podcast. And that was fortuitous because we are presenting a series of panels as part of Cambridge Sound and Vision this Friday, as the podcast goes out, all about the business of comedy. So Cambridge Sound and Vision is a festival taking place in Cambridge. That's a surprise. Mm-hmm. And it's both music and comedy and the wider sort of creative industries, with a bit of conference and lots of great showcases happening in the evening. So there's some music stuff going on as well. Lots of great music showcases, some great music panels happening. CMU's Sam Taylor is popping up in one of those. But we are actually presenting four panels all about the business of comedy, because we have a secret double life where we have another website called This Week Culture, and we have our Edinburgh Festival magazine. That's all about comedy and culture. So we are going to be doing some panels on what a career in comedy looks like in the YouTube, Twitch, TikTok age, because it's kind of changed in recent years. We're going to be having a look at how comedians, comedy performers, and comedy creators are using digital platforms like YouTube and TikTok, and also podcasts. We're going to have people from Acast there talking about how comedians are building businesses around podcasting. We're going to talk about live streaming and how the hell you do comedy or similar types of shows when you're live streaming. And we're going to be talking about the role the Edinburgh Fringe has in the comedy business as it returns properly this summer. So that is all happening. So if you're in or near Cambridge and you're interested in how the comedy industry works, why not join us in person? It's all happening at Cambridge Junction. Or the whole thing is being live streamed by the Next Up Comedy platform as well. So if you're a Next Up Comedy member, you can tune in live, or they will also be available on demand the following couple of days. If you're not a Next Up Comedy member, well, we've arranged to get you a 24-hour free trial, so you can watch the panels, you can check out everything else that's on the Next Up system, and then, assuming you like what you see, which I think you will, you can then become a full-on member. So that's happening Friday, the 22nd of April.
Look at that. We're giving something away. 24 hours access to Next Up is worth having.
It definitely is. And also, if you use the link that we have in the Setlist podcast notes, if you want to come to the live event, we've also got a discount link you can use to get in at half the price. So make sure you check out the links if you're interested in anything to do with comedy.
Yes, indeed. And now, number three, third thing, last thing, and then we'll get on with the show.
Last thing to plug is, while we were away on that big 1 week gap, we announced a load of stuff about the Great Escape Conference that is happening in Brighton next month in May, including the CMU TGE sessions, three full day strands curated and hosted by us here at CMU. On Wednesday, the 11th of May, we're looking at music and education. We'll kick off the day by saying, with 8 million creators on Spotify, with those 70,000 new tracks going live every day, clearly there are a lot of hobbyist musicians who are now turning their hobby into a monetized sideline. You know, when those Spotify stats came out recently and everyone seemed surprised how many people there were putting up music on Spotify who had only put up, like, you know, 8 or 9 tracks. And lots of people,
or less.
And everyone's like, well, what's going on there? And it's like, well, because we've got this whole movement of people who make music as a passion, but then upload it to Spotify. And some cases, because they want to turn it into a career. But in other cases, just because, you know, they're happy with their career, but they like doing some music on the sideline, like people always have done. Except today, when you're a hobbyist musician, you turn your passion into money through things like Spotify. So what does the music community look like? When do we say that somebody who's making music as a passion, as a hobby, but then they're making some money through Spotify, does that mean they're part of the music industry or not? These are all the things that we're going to be discussing in our music and education strand on the Wednesday. Thursday is music and data. We'll be looking at rights and track data and all of the tedious spreadsheet stuff that gets your music recommended and played. So I'm sorry, if you don't do the spreadsheet stuff, no one will hear your music. And even if they do, you won't get paid for it. So we'll explain to you all the data stuff you need to know. We'll also be talking about fan data and blockchain and NFTs. And we're going to basically get... And Andy's not involved in the discussion around NFTs and blockchain, but I'm planning on putting him on the stage and tying him down so he has to listen to it. And...
what?
And educate himself about the opportunities in that space.
Oh, I'm aware of all the opportunities. I've researched the topic thoroughly, and I still come to the same conclusion.
Well, the aforementioned Sam from CMU is going to tell Andy why he's wrong at the end of the music and data strand on the Thursday of Great Escape. So there might be a CMU fist fight at the end of the day. So that surely is reason alone to come along to the Music and Data Strand. The Friday is music and video. We're going to be teaming up with Centric Music to do a really insightful overview of the sync market and also some of the big debates around sync. We'll also begin looking at the video content you have to create today as an artist, whether you like it or not. The TikTok team are going to be there talking about the kinds of videos that gain traction on that platform. We'll also be talking about Metaverse a little bit as well. So those are the CMU TGE sessions. Other things to be aware of on the Saturday is the TGE Elevate sessions, which we're also involved in, which is a whole load of fantastic stuff aimed at people, again, who are earlier on in their music career. Plus, there are the keynote in conversations. We've got the PR legend that is Barbara Sharon. She's got a memoir coming out. She's going to be talking about that on the Friday. On the Thursday, I will be sitting down with Tom Gray from the Broken Record Campaign and Kevin Brennan MP to talk about all of that sort of stuff and, you know, how the artist community managed to get momentum going and where that might go next. And we've got some other exciting keynotes that we haven't announced yet, so maybe I can fill up slightly less, but nevertheless some of the next edition of Setlist telling you about the keynoting conversations that we have not yet announced. So if you've not got your Great Escape Delegate Pass, get it. See you in Brighton from the 11th to the 14th of May.
Okay, well, that's all three things plugged for this week, at least. But...
yeah, but, apparently, according to the script, I don't know why, but we're not here to talk about any of that on this edition of Setlist. I mean, we really should, but it definitely says here in the script that we're not.
No. Later on, we're going to be discussing the producer suing Justin Bieber for breaking promises on royalties. But first... the management of Sheffield's Leadmill venue announced earlier this month that they'd been served with an eviction notice by their landlord to leave the building by next year. The Leadmill has been running since 1980, and the venue's a well-established feature of the Sheffield and indeed the entire UK music scene. It was initially assumed, not least due to the vagueness of the first statement on the matter, that this was a move by some big corporate landlord who wanted to capitalise on the vibrance brought to a part of a city by a music venue by shutting it down and converting it into a block of flats, which is the classic music venue being shut down story. But it quickly emerged that the landlord that had issued the eviction notice was actually a live music company.
Yeah, that company is The Electric Group, which owns a small network of music venues around the UK. It started out with The Electric Brixton in, Brixton in South London in 2011 in the former cinema that had once housed the nightclub The Fridge. And it was from Electric Brixton that The Electric Group took its name. They then expanded by acquiring a venue in Bristol called SWX in 2017, and they are currently refurbishing the old Newcastle Academy, which is due to reopen as NX later this year. So this is not a big sinister corporate landlord like we normally get in stories like this. It is in fact a live music company which was founded by its CEO Dominic Madden and a guy called Jake Lewis, who is part of the Lewis family, who are a family that have lots of different business interests, probably best known for owning the River Island retail chain. And the Electric Group bought the freehold on the building that houses the Leadmill in Sheffield in 2017, the previous owners having put it on the market a few years before that. Although at the time that the building went on the market, there was a flurry of speculation that that was bad news for the future of the Leadmill. At the time, the venue's management sought to reassure people that yes, the building is up for sale, but we don't anticipate that having a problem for us in the short term, not least because their lease was running to 2023, which of course, back in 2014, when it first became clear that the building was up for sale, seemed like quite a long way away. And at that point, we did not know that two of the years between 2014 and 2023 would be dead years to the live industry. So back when the building went up for sale, the management of the Leadmill were kind of optimistic. It doesn't matter. It's just that the building's going to change hands. And even
it wasn't the first time that had happened. So it was kind of normal for them, for the building to change hands and them to carry on.
And even once the Electric Group had bought it in 2017, it seems like the current management team were under the impression that it was business as usual. It doesn't seem like they were worrying that when their current lease came up for renewal in 2023 that things were going to change. But as of last month, it became clear that that was not what was going to happen.
Yes, because Electric Group has decided not to renew that lease. Instead, as you've probably guessed, it plans to install its own team to run the venue. And that, as you've probably also guessed, was quite a controversial move. Although initially, Dominic Madden from Electric Group's statements on the matter were more countering the fact that everyone assumed it was some commercial property company trying to turn the building into flats. So in a tweet shortly after the Lead Mill went public, he said, "We're music people. We spend our lives running independent music venues, and the Lead Mill will continue to operate as a special music venue. The management may change, but the song stays the same."
Yeah, you initially sensed that he was hoping that the backlash that inevitably followed the Lead Mill announcing they were being evicted, you sort of thought that he was thinking, oh, the only reason there's a backlash is because everyone thinks this is a sinister corporate landlord, going to turn it into flats or offices or whatever. And as soon as I put the record straight and make sure everyone realizes that, no, 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 we're a venue company, it's going to stay a venue, everything will be fine. Everything was not fine. Because the current management of the Lead Mill immediately hit back in turn, basically saying, okay, maybe you're not going to turn this building into flats, maybe you're not going to turn it into an office, maybe you're going to keep it as a venue, but still, we are angry that we have worked for all of these years, and I mean, in essence, for decades, in building this into the brilliant popular venue that it is, and then you're basically swooping in and taking it over. And so they said, the current management team, that is, that, you know, it was the current team and the people who've been involved in that team over the last four decades who turned what was a derelict flour mill into this popular music venue beginning back in 1980. Over the decades, the team have invested millions of pounds into growing the business. And basically, they were saying all the Electric Group wants to do is to profit from that investment, profit from the goodwill, from the good name, from the brand that the current team have been involved in creating in order to enter the Sheffield market, having already entered the London, Bristol, and soon Newcastle markets by using the goodwill, the brand, the name of the Lead Mill. And so they said that while the Electric Group may be an independent music company, they still considered the decision to get rid of the current management team and to put their own team in place was a cheap, shabby, sly, and underhand way of doing business.
Now, countering that point of view, Madden said in an interview with the Sheffield Star, local newspaper up there, "It shouldn't be a massive surprise given we bought the Lead Mill and we spent our lives acquiring, operating and nurturing grassroots music venues elsewhere that it would clearly be the intention to take it back at the end of the lease, refurbish it and invest in it and make sure it's ready to serve audiences and artists for the next 30 years. He also said that his company has a track record of investing in music venues and an understanding of the cultural significance of this venue in Sheffield.
However, it has to be said, there are lots of people in the Sheffield music community and the wider music community who are supporting the current team at Lead Mill in this dispute. And I think that they would say that even though Electric Group is a live music company and Madden is saying that the song will stay the same, clearly things are going to change once the new team is in place. When the Electric Group has taken over the other venues that they have taken over, there are usually pretty dramatic overhauls and refits at those venues. So it seems likely that probably something similar will happen at the Lead Mill next year. And of course, there is the name. Will it continue to be called the Lead Mill? Now, in his interview with the Star, Madden seemed to be saying that he would like it to continue to be the Lead Mill. After all, although they are changing the name of the Newcastle venue that they've taken over, and of course they changed the name of the Brixton venue to Electric Brixton when they opened that, they did keep the name of the Bristol venue they acquired the same. So Madden told the Star in that interview that he would quite like to keep the Lead Mill running as the Lead Mill, even once they've refitted the venue and got new management in place, although he did concede to the Star that he was consulting his lawyers on whether or not that would be possible.
Yes, and then in another statement after that interview came out, the existing management said that no, he could not do that. They said, "The Lead Mill brand and name is owned by us and only us. Without us, there is no Lead Mill. Mr. Madden, stop using the Lead Mill's name to further your miserable, mean ambitions." Though it seemed that Madden had already foreseen potential problems with keeping the name, because it emerged shortly after that that Electric Group had applied to trademark the name Electric Sheffield back in February. So, yes, the name may be changing. And also, if the current management have their way, it won't just be the name that goes when they leave the building. The general manager of the lead mill, the current general manager of the lead mill, Ian Lawler, gave an interview to The Star as well. And he said, "They keep saying the lead mill will continue, that the lead mill will be safe. The lead mill will not continue. The lead mill is us, the staff and all the fixtures. We'll take everything with us because we own it. The fixtures, the equipment, the doors. When we leave, it will be a derelict flour mill and that's what they'll be left with. They'll have to start from scratch. It will take them a year to get up and running."
Yes, yeah, so although Madden did talk about in that Star interview that the Electric Group were going to spend a chunk of money on sort of overhauling, refitting the lead mill, don't know whether he was anticipating maybe that much work to be done if and when they take the venue. If and when, interesting, isn't it? I mean, clearly, as you can see, and we've had a number of stories on this in CME Daily, the current lead mill team are not going quietly, and they are, as I say, getting plenty of support from the Sheffield music community and the wider music community and artist community. And in fact, not only are they not going quietly, they are actually fighting to see if they can stay in the venue and get this decision that the Electric Group have made overturned. Now, it has to be said, in this interview in The Star that we've mentioned a few times, Madden, although he was trying to say, "I'm happy to talk to anybody about our plans, let's all sit down and have a conversation," at the same time, he seemed pretty adamant in that interview that the ultimate decision to put his own management team in at the venue, that was not going to change, seemed to be what he was saying in that interview. However, the current lead mill team are hoping that they could nevertheless find a way to stay in that building, which brings us to the petition that they set up on the UK Parliament's website last week. As soon as it became clear they were being evicted, they said, "We're going to set up a petition. All of our supporters, wait until the petition is set up so you can sign it." You might think that the UK Parliament website is an odd place to be putting a petition of this kind if the petition was, as you might have expected, basically pleading with or demanding that the Electric Group change their position, change their mind, allow the current management team to stay in place. But actually, that's not what the petition set up on the UK Parliament website is all about. Instead, what the current management team at the lead mill are calling for is for a thing called the Landlord and Tenant Act to be suspended, or specifically one section of the UK's Landlord and Tenant Act to be suspended, pending a government review of how landlords are currently able to basically take and exploit investments made by tenants in their properties. So the petition is actually political and legal as part of a strategy that the current lead mill team have identified, which could potentially be a way to allow them to stay in that building.
Yeah, so the petition states, "Section 25 of the Landlord and Tenant Act can be exploited by landlords, allowing them to expropriate the investment the tenant has made into the premises, including any goodwill developed over many years. The government has said it will review the Landlord and Tenant Act. We are calling for a suspension of Section 25, ground C to G, so that tenants cannot be evicted until a government review has been concluded and any reforms implemented." In a social media post announcing the petition, the venue explained, "We are calling for a suspension to Section 25 of the Landlord and Tenant Act, ground C to G, in order to help us save the lead mill, as well as helping to protect the many other vulnerable businesses across the country who lease the buildings in which they operate from. 93% of grassroots music venues do not own the buildings that they operate within and are also at risk," it goes on. "This is an extremely important step in our bid to secure jobs for our workforce and for the lead mill to remain at the heart of our community. So please do share this petition far and wide to secure our survival."
Now, that petition, as it went live last week, pretty quickly passed the 10,000 signature threshold that is needed to secure an official response from the government. As we record, we don't have that official response. It will be interesting to see what the government says. Obviously, it does remain to be seen whether or not the current lead mill team can win any legal battle with the Electric Group, with or without support from the political community. Although, as I've said several times, There is a lot of support for the current Leadmill team. It does feel like they are so far winning the PR war, even if the legal battle is a little unclear at the moment. The NME ran quite an interesting article where they spoke to various people based in Sheffield and involved in the Sheffield music scene, and the people they interviewed said that this is actually quite a big talking point within that community. It's not something that's only being talked about on Twitter and Instagram. There are plenty of people within Sheffield and the Sheffield music community who are pretty angry about what is happening, which is presumably not what, well, certainly not what the Electric Group wanted, whether or not they expected quite this big a backlash. As I say, I think you sort of sense that the initial backlash they thought was because of the misunderstanding, because everybody initially assumed, including myself, that, oh, this is another example of a venue being turned into flats or whatever. And you sort of feel that they thought that once they'd set the record straight on that, that maybe the backlash would subside, but that has not happened. So, yeah, we will see how things progress in the weeks ahead.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, an Australian producer and sound engineer called Chris Tech O'Ryan has sued Justin Bieber's manager Scooter Braun and the company JRC Entertainment over allegations that promises were broken regarding producer royalties on a number of Bieber tracks that he helped produce. O'Ryan claims that in 2018, Bieber's management team agreed to change the way he got paid for his work so that he'd get a royalty right as well as an upfront fee, but that they then subsequently claimed the royalty right would only apply to specific tracks as selected by the Bieber team.
Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of producer royalties, it's possibly worth looking at the role that O'Ryan actually plays within the pop music making process. He is what is sometimes referred to as a vocal producer. And in the words of his lawsuit, that means that his primary job is to polish and finesse the vocals on any track he is involved with. His lawsuit also notes that this is a role in the music industry that quite often gets downplayed, partly because some artists who have vocal producers working on their tracks in this way are slightly nervous that they will get criticism that studio tricks are involved in order to fix their singing and not just a little bit of modest auto-tuning, something a little bit more substantial going on in order to, well, get the best vocals, but maybe critics would say to get passable vocals, I don't know.
Yeah, but O'Ryan's lawsuit says that the work of vocal producers is indispensable to modern pop music. Meanwhile, the level of attention to detail required cannot be overstated, often involving timing and pitch shifts measured in mere fractions of a millisecond or semitone, with individual words split into dozens of manipulable pieces before being expertly reassembled. So Ryan's worked with Justin Bieber for quite some time, but as I said, this legal dispute relates to an email exchange with Bieber's management team in 2018 when the producer sought to change his payment terms so that he'd get a royalty right in addition to an upfront fee. Now, it's pretty common in the music industry for studio producers to get a royalty on any recording they work on in addition to an upfront fee, and this royalty is often referred to as the producer getting points, mainly because 3 points sounds better than 3%. Because it has to be said, the producer royalty is usually just a few percent of any income a recording generates. And it usually comes out of the artist's share of the money, not the label's share, which is why Bieber and his management team will have opinions about which producers get points.
Yes, they will. And especially when, as is often the case with pop music these days, there are multiple producers working on any one track. Because if multiple producers are getting points on the track, well, each producer's share is going to be pretty small once the 2-3, maybe 4% is being shared out. I mean, unless the artist is willing to take a hit to boost the money that is going to the producer. So I guess question to be asked here is, should a specialist vocal producer get points as well as the main producer on a track? Well, whatever you think about that, Orion says that when renegotiating his terms back in 2018, Bieber's management were fine with him getting a point, so 1% on the recording, in addition to any upfront fee that he was charging. And so Orion assumed that that had been agreed, and so that would be the system moving forward as he got about working on doing his vocal production work on Bieber's 2021 album, Justice.
However, it seems Team Bieber then subsequently backtracked on that commitment, arguing that the 2018 agreement didn't in fact apply to every track Orion worked on, and instead he would be awarded a point on certain tracks at the management team's discretion. Or maybe just when they remember that he's actually worked on a track, because Orion alleges that Scooter Braun told him that the reasons he didn't get points on some of the Justice tracks were because the Bieber team hadn't initially been aware that the producer had even worked on them, and by the time that became apparent, too many points had already been distributed to other producers who contributed to the recordings. And regarding that discussion over his Justice royalties, or lack of them, Orion's lawsuit says Braun did not deny the terms of the 2018 agreement, but rather admitted he had already allocated Tech's rightful point to someone else.
Explaining why Orion was now going legal, lawyers working for the producer also stated, having now been effectively cast aside by the artist he spent more than a decade helping to build up, Tech has no choice but to turn to the courts to ensure that Bieber's team lives up to the party's bargain and properly credits and compensates him after years of loyal service. But we should probably add, in order to be balanced, because we like being balanced here on Setlist, that a spokesperson for Braun did respond to this lawsuit. We've not got a formal legal response as yet, but they did issue a statement to Billboard. And in that statement, Braun's spokesperson said that Orion's lawsuit was deeply unfortunate and inaccurate, misleading and deceitful. And the spokesperson added, his false claims take away from the hard work of album producer and lead engineer Josh Goodwin and his team. So we wait to see how this one plays out. As always, will it just get settled out of court? Probably will. But I mean, if it does proceed, it could put the spotlight on quite how the pop production process works and what all those different people do along the way. And what rights and payments they get in return. So if it does proceed, it could be quite an interesting case to follow.
Yes, but that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here this week, go and find the links to all our articles in the show notes, which you'll find in your podcast player, or at setlistpodcast.com. You'll also find the links to all the stuff we plugged in the intro there, including your 24 hours free access to the Next Up Comedy streaming service. So go and look that up. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't already to get new episodes every week. Don't forget to rate and review the show if you haven't already, or even if you had. And also don't forget to just tell a friend that the show's good, because that's a thing you can do. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, you can email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.